Right off the bat, I want to say that my guest has a website. It's called dadsraisingdaughters.com. His name is John Griffith. He's also got a book. It's called A Dad's Fun Guide to Raising Happy Daughters, Imagination Activities Against Body-Snatching Zombie Naysayers and Other Foes of Happiness. John Griffith, welcome. How are you today?
Fantastic, and thank you for giving me the honor or the opportunity, actually, to speak to you and your audience.
All right, let's set the scene here. You are a father of three daughters, correct?
Correct.
They are how old?
Well, they're spaced kind of like layers of a canyon. So I've got 19, 14, and 6.
Why did you decide to write this book?
Well, I'm actually going to steal a little quote from what your bio. I was reading about you articulating intuition. And children, I think, express, and in fact, they express this sense of joy and happiness and this purpose of life that, as we grow older, society, media, unintentionally, sort of coaxes us away from that. And some thinking patterns begin to set in that we're not born with and that we don't even have as young children. And I started to observe a very different disposition between observing children on their playgrounds and adults in their playgrounds, airports, malls, and I saw a very unhappy older people. And I started to ponder, and I was one of those too, and I started to wonder, that surely can't be the purpose of life. What kind of life would it be, and who would want to live it if they knew it was going to be the best at the beginning and just get worse from there? And so they helped me actually unravel some of the thinking patterns that we get taught. And so they helped me rediscover and the happiness that is natural to us. And so I originally wrote the book as a gift to them, in a sense, a roadmap, knowing that they may themselves get coaxed away despite my best efforts. And when I finished it, I realized this is a powerful, powerful book for anyone. You know, I'm a dad and their daughter, so it's written through that voice, but it doesn't matter what kind of parent you are. It could be an uncle, aunt, grandparent. Mm-hmm. That's over the stewardship of young ones. And so it's a powerful book that is intended to be shared, and it was really just a gift. Had no intention of publishing it, but goodness sakes, I knew I had to.
This is what strikes me reading about you, reading through the book, is you kind of exude this joy, this happiness. I understand happiness is part of the title, and so I'm using a word that you use, but it really does come through. Something really excites you about being a parent.
It does. You know, I have always said that my greatest teachers are those three right there. You know, parents oftentimes think, I'm the parent, this is the kid, I know a lot more than they do. When you think about it, you know, you and I discussed, you have a child, and I have three, I wasn't a parent until that first one was born. Mm-hmm. And the lesson started right then. I had no training, you know, other than, you know, the tactical stuff, diapers and, you know, crossing streets and riding bikes. But the real lessons, those internal emotional lessons, were taught to me just by their own outreach of whatever that was going on in their lives at the time. And so I love that. And it didn't just start with daughter one and end with daughter one. Mm-hmm. Daughter two came along, and it continued, and they were different. And one thing I want to say is, you know, when daughter two was born, I was not their dad. I was her dad, right? And I was her dad. Every time each daughter was born, I was uniquely her dad, and they are all unique, and it requires a unique approach to every one of them with the same lessons underneath. But oftentimes, you know, we think we just kind of lump in, treat them, you know, the same and be the same, and it really is not that way. So I continue to learn, and if it wasn't so irresponsible, I'd keep being a dad for the end of my life, and I will be. But you know, I had to at some point cut it off and say, okay, I'm going to put my efforts here.
I really like the way you emphasize when the second one came along, and you'd say the same for the third. I was her dad, or anybody who doesn't have daughters could say I was his dad. I mean, that's the point that you're making, is that person, that one person, no matter where it is in the line of children, whether it's one of two or three or five, I mean, we who have a single child, and that's all I'm going to have, is I'll have a single child. And so it's not hard for me to say I am her dad, but I really like what you say about parents needing to recognize that as far as that young person is concerned, are you going to be my father? Are you going to be my mother and treat me as if I'm the special one and not one of several?
Yeah, it's absolutely how it is. And, you know, parents, that's why I say I continue to learn, because That's a life lesson that can be applied to just about any environment, whether it's work or whatever. But, you know, it really is that unique interaction, that human uniqueness. You know, daughter two didn't sign up to be shared, right?
Yeah, right.
Daughter one didn't. And then that's part of it, too, is let's all learn how to also be a family together.
Yeah. So. Yeah. You know, one of the other things that strikes me, and you've mentioned how you learn as a parent. I feel like I have learned as a parent also. I've learned some things that have given me the opportunity to develop a part of myself that I never had to develop before I became a parent. And it has paid off, I think, in other relationships. But I want your reaction to this. I think all parents, because I don't know why it wouldn't be, have that opportunity. But a lot of people don't learn those parenting lessons of a positive, happy nature. It seems like parenting is drudgery to them, or they do it very poorly. What separates the person who will learn and say, well, I've been given this opportunity. Maybe it's time now for me to express better patience, or it's given me the opportunity. Maybe now I will set a better example. Not everybody does that.
You know, that's true. And I think I don't know the answer, and I surely don't want to criticize anyone because I was that person too, and for some reason I had this awakening. That awakening actually was triggered by the smile that I saw happen in about 2 weeks in a crib with no purpose at all. They peed and pooped and did everything else for purpose, but that smile had no purpose. And that's really was the spark that was lit inside of me. But I think I know that it is really spending quality time with your children, making memories, is really where, you know, you just can the bonding happen, and you really get to see kind of and know what's underneath the child. You know, I was writing a little bit the other day, and I was writing about how oftentimes as parents we're just like, you know, you're not going to wear those tight sweats. This is me talking that has some word right across the butt, right? That was something my daughters, you know, were, you know, hey, everybody's wearing this, you know, can I get a pair of those? Absolutely not. And a lot of parents just stop there. Absolutely not. And so I think it's diving into the why, what's underneath that. So in that case, it was the messaging that one conveys out to others, your value as a person, what you want others to value in you as a person as you grow up. And so those deeper conversations, I think parents historically have been, you know, rules and regulations, but not really really going deeper into why this is an important thing. So the rules and regulations, if that's how you operate, the minute they're 18 and out the door, they're going to say, oh, now I got to figure out why this was a rule, right? And it's the Pinocchio story. You know, he goes and parties with the the fox or whatever he has in that story because he just wants to be grown up. But if they go out there armed with that understanding of, you know, this is why, and actually I can observe some of the choices people make and the outcomes, then it's not rules and regulations. It's connecting and lessons, and I think just that really deep sharing is so critical and important.
I need to let you go in a moment. I want to just hit one more thing before we do. First of all, I want to say to the listeners that haven't seen the book, I really like the activities. I read through so many of the activities saying, oh, I wish I would have done that, or I intend to do that, or I could do that. So I like the activities, but I want to focus before I let you go. Good portion of the middle part of the book, Seven Keys to Happiness, Living with Naysayers, Living in a Zombie Apocalypse, Staying Out of the Dark, Overcoming Obstacles Through Invention, Time Traveling to the Future, Having a Life Full of Miracles, Understanding Your Eternal Nature. Choose one of those just to give listeners a flavor of whichever one strikes you at this moment in time that you would say, here, folks, I want you to hear one thing about this.
Well, I think one of the one that works the best, or one of the best for me anyway, and because I think it's a trap that really is one of the things that does cause that drifting from happiness as people get older. So my book is those seven lessons are kind of paired with a story and then a love letter from me that explains the wisdom of the story. So the zombie apocalypse story is about the phenomenon of zombies, and when you think about them as a monster. You know, and I trace it back to George A. Romero's movies that most adults are probably familiar with. You know, you have to wonder, why is this thing so popular, right? Vampires are kind of suave and sophisticated and handsome or beautiful. You know their names, even Dracula, et cetera. Werewolves are tribal and familial. Zombies are just gross. You don't know the name of any single one. There's nothing appealing about them, yet it is by far the most phenomenal or pop phenomenon in the monster culture. And so I started to think, okay, that's an interesting phenomenon. So why is that? And And then I started to think about something that we do as we get older, which was just start to hold on to the past. And we're actually taught to do that. You know, we have shows on TV on how to get even, how to get revenge, how to, you know, get away with murder, whatever that is. It's just how to get back at people. And as we get older, we tend to start holding on to these things from the past, be it unforgiveness or be it mistakes that we made that we just couldn't forgive ourselves, or something that we wished we didn't do, regret. And the past is an unchangeable zone. You can't change any of that. You can only change how you feel about it. And so when people start living like that and holding on to that past, they are, in a sense, raising the dead. So that creates a zombie life with all kinds of dangerous things looming around you in the terms of thought. And just like zombies, you start to get sick. You can't sleep. Mm-hmm. You get tight, rigor mortis. You start to be somewhat dumb. And you want to tell your story to other people who will listen. In a sense, you're eating the brains because you just start to moan like zombies. Mm-hmm. And so it was the perfect metaphor for what we do that really we could really teach our children and teach ourselves as to how to deal with things in the past in a healthy way.
Yeah, and I like what you, one of the thoughts you say in that is dead things stink for a reason. So that's pretty good.
Yeah.
Dead things stink.
You know, I always say there's a natural a nature reflection of what I'm talking about emotionally. You know, you don't go eat something that's dead. It smells. Mm-hmm. Everything about it turns you away from it. And your emotions are, in a way, the stink that's telling you, hey, this is not the way to be dealing with this thing.
John Griffith has many things, including a father of three daughters. He writes about that in A Dad's Fun Guide to Raising Happy Daughters, Imagination Activities Against Body-Snatching Zombie Naysayers and Other Foes of Happiness. And
hey,
he also,
Dave,
yes?
I could have, one more thing. Your Columbia Barnes & Noble store there is phenomenal. I talked to them.
Yeah.
They like you very much, and they, in fact, ordered a batch of books. So I just wanted you to know that they would be there in
Good.
Case people decided to go pick it up.
Good. John Griffith, and you can also check out more at his website, dadsraisingdaughters.com. Look for his Dad's Fun Guide to Raising Happy Daughters. Again, Barnes & Noble will have that. Great to talk to you. Thank you. Best of luck and continued success in raising your family.
Thanks, David. You have a good day.